Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at the latest research on the Southeast Asian digital economy, specifically the Economy SEA 2025 reports.
Yeah.
And we're going to filter that right down to the policy critical insights you need, focusing on transport and food delivery.
Yeah, it's definitely the right time. I mean, the scale alone is staggering. The whole digital economy there is, well, it's on track to blow past $300 billion in gross merchandise value.
$300 billion. Wow.
And what's really interesting is that this is 1.5 times the original forecast, the one from just 10 years ago. So it's not just growing, it's actually accelerating.
That scale really signals significant regulatory weight, doesn't it?
Mm.
And for you, our policy shaping listeners, it's key to know the scope's broadened too. We're not just talking the CA6 anymore.
No, exactly. The research now covers the full CON10. That's what, a total population of 614 million people.
Huge footprint for any policy decision.
Absolutely. So our mission here is to pull out those specific threads where policy intervention is, let's say, most needed. We're zoning in on food delivery and transport. These sectors are shifting, you know, moving away from that subsidized growth phase towards profitability, sustainability.
Right.
And both are showing steady growth, about 15% year over year for GMV and revenue. That move towards stability, even with all the disruption, that's where policy really needs to engage.
Okay, great. Let's unpack that, starting with food delivery. For years, it felt like the story was just growth at all costs.
Yeah.
But the sources seem to strongly suggest it's finally nearing real profitability, moving away from burning cash.
That pivot really is the story right now. And the numbers back it up. Food delivery GMV for the CA6, it's projected to hit $22 billion in 2025. Maybe $23 billion for the full Asian 10.
Okay.
But the really crucial number, I think, is the revenue growth. It jumped sharply. We're talking a 33% year-over-year increase between 2023 and 2024.
33%. So they're getting much better at actually making money from the service.
Exactly. They're monetizing much faster.
But how? Are they just hiking prices, making it unaffordable, or is there something else going on?
It really comes down to, well, operational mastery. They've managed to significantly cut their cost to serve.
How so?
Think about optimized logistics. You know, smarter AI routing, batching orders together, streamlining how things work on the ground. And crucially, this is really concentrated in the dense metro areas. That's where the scale and density make efficiency easier to achieve.
Okay, and this is where it gets interesting for consumers, right? And maybe where regulators need to pay attention. The market seems to be shifting. Food delivery isn't just a luxury anymore. It's becoming more routine.
Mm-hmm.
So platforms are pushing what, more affordable options, different menus, and using tactics like group orders to boost the average order value, the AOV.
Precisely. Getting that AOV up is critical to cover those fixed delivery costs.
Yeah.
And this links directly to how they're diversifying revenue streams, too. It's not just about the delivery commission anymore. We're seeing really high double-digit growth in advertising revenue. That tells you the smaller players, the independent restaurants, they're now using the platform's ad tools.
Reaching those huge customer bases.
Exactly. And it goes beyond ads, too. They're getting deeper into the actual restaurant business, things like dining vouchers, loyalty programs, even running those cloud kitchens.
Capturing value before the delivery bag is even sealed.
And this expansion into dining, that's got huge policy relevance for the merchants themselves. Policy shapers know delivery commissions can be brutal, right? Often 20, 25%. That really hurts restaurant margins.
A major pain point, absolutely.
So by offering things like dining vouchers or loyalty integration, the platforms can become marketing partners. They can drive the core high-margin dine-in business for restaurants. It gives merchants a vital alternative to just paying those high delivery fees. It fosters a maybe more sustainable relationship.
Okay, that makes sense. It shifts them from just being a logistics firm to more of a full-stack commerce partner for restaurants. Mm-hmm. All right, let's transition smoothly then. Over to transport. Similar story of resilient growth, but maybe with a bigger regulatory angle.
The stability is definitely there. Transport GMV looks set to hit $11.1 billion in 2025 for CA6, maybe $11.5 billion across ASEAN 10. But yeah, the revenue story is even stronger here. We saw a massive jump. Plus 41% year over year between 2023 and 2024.
41%. Wow. Okay, so they're pulling some serious levers there. Yeah. What strategies are driving that kind of acceleration?
It's a few things working together. They're getting smarter about segmenting users, like a tiered approach for mass versus high-value customers. Premium services, standard services.
Okay.
They're pushing subscription bundles pretty hard, trying to lock in loyalty and get people using the service more often. They're also adding in-app ads, another revenue stream, just like in food.
Mm-hmm.
And critically, they're directly boosting profitability by cutting back on those expensive consumer incentives, the discounts and promotions.
Ah, okay. Reducing incentives. That's key for the platform's bottom line, mm-hmm. Sure. But what does that mean for keeping users, especially in price-sensitive markets? Isn't there a risk it slows down growth eventually?
It's definitely a delicate balance. And yeah, that's a policy area worth watching. For now, it seems demand is sticky enough. Users aren't leaving in droves just because discounts are smaller. But this shift brings us neatly to the really critical policy intersection in transport right now, accelerating EV adoption.
Right. This feels less like a choice and more like a mandatory transition. The sources really highlight this as a major area for public-private cooperation. EV adoption is speeding up, pushed by government incentives and platform demand. Especially strong in Vietnam and Indonesia, it seems.
Yeah, and the government commitments are getting very concrete, very time-bound. Take Vietnam. Ho Chi Minh City has specific subsidies targeting 20,000 two-wheeler conversions. That's aimed squarely at the gig economy fleet.
20,000. That's specific. Mm. And Hanoi's going even further, right? Planning to ban fossil fuel motorbikes in the CBD from July 2026. That seems incredibly ambitious.
It is aggressive. It signals a forced shift, which definitely carries regulatory risk if the rollout isn't smooth. It shows governments are willing to use the legislative hammer to meet climate targets. They're counting on platforms and private companies to handle a lot of the practical side.
And similar moves in Indonesia.
Yes, similar commitments there. Incentives for electric two-wheelers, trying to encourage local EV production to meet the demand. These actions really underline the government's active role in steering this transition.
Okay, so that's the immediate picture. EV transition is happening, government mandated. Now let's look further out, the future disruption. Autonomous vehicles, AVs. Pilots are already underway in 6 Asian countries, apparently. This isn't just sci-fi anymore.
No, it's being tested on the ground. And from an economic standpoint, the disruption looks quite near. AV economics could seriously outperform human drivers. The sources suggest maybe within the next 3 to 5 years.
3 to 5 years? Why so soon?
A combination of factors. Manufacturing costs are coming down, especially with Chinese makers pushing hard. You've got advanced level 4 capabilities needing fewer remote overseers. And just better vehicle utilization. Robotaxis don't need coffee breaks or sleep.
Right. This throws up a massive policy challenge, doesn't it? One that hits right at the core mandate for many ASEAN governments. Employment.
Absolutely. That is the central tension here. Regulators are, understandably, very cautious. They have to be. Transport platforms are a huge source of employment, kind of the backbone for millions in the gig economy. So policy has to somehow balance that undeniable efficiency gain from AVs with managing the risk of displacing all those drivers.
And the regulatory landscape itself is, well, all over the place.
Highly fractured, yes. Singapore is basically the only ASEAN country with comprehensive AV regulations already in place. That fragmentation creates massive uncertainty, slows things down for everyone.
Plus, there are other hurdles. Consumer acceptance.
Yeah.
And the tech itself.
Both are still issues. People are curious, sure, but trust and acceptance are still low. And technically, AVs trained elsewhere often struggle. They need to be validated in the, let's say, unique and often chaotic traffic patterns you find across Southeast Asia.
Which is why these partnerships between AV developers and the local mobility platforms are so crucial, as the sources stress.
Exactly. It's about operational synergy. The local platforms bring things the AV tech companies don't have. Existing customers, deep knowledge of local maps, demand patterns, and importantly, the flexibility to blend AVs and human drivers during the transition.
So it's about localizing the tech, not just importing it.
Precisely.
Okay, let's zoom out slightly. Let's talk about the engine behind a lot of this efficiency and disruption in both food and transport. The AI wildcard. Not just theoretical AI, but how it's being used right now.
Yes, the operational application is where AI is making a real difference today. The sources have some pretty striking examples. One big super app handled over 6 million merchant queries using AI. Think of the support cost savings.
6 million. Wow.
Yeah. And maybe even more impressive, over 250,000 drivers are using an AI companion tool every week. And it reportedly boosted their daily earnings by 10 to 20%. Better matching, smarter routes. AI is delivering tangible productivity gains now.
Okay, if it's already delivering that kind of value, why isn't it just being rolled out everywhere across the region at full speed? Seems like there must be a policy bottleneck.
Yeah, absolutely is. AI integration hits two main roadblocks. First, as we mentioned with AVs, that fragmented regulatory environment across ASEAN. It creates real uncertainty for companies looking to make big cross-border investments in AI models.
Right. And the second hurdle?
It's the cost versus labor equation. Simple economics, really.
Yeah.
The upfront cost for sophisticated AI, the models, the cloud computing, the hardware, it's still very high. And in many parts of ASEAN, labor costs are, relatively speaking, quite low.
So why spend millions automating something if human labor is still cheaper?
Exactly. The ROI calculation for full automation just isn't there yet across much of the region, which interestingly gives policymakers a bit of breathing room, a window to prepare.
So pulling all this together, what does it mean for the next decade? Where's the tipping point?
The sources seem quite clear on this. Growth ahead depends on whether the big catalysts, AI acceleration, renewed investment, more ASEAN cooperation can overcome the headwinds, things like global uncertainty, local friction. But the truly decisive factor, it's going to be the wild card of regulatory choices.
Which means regulators need to be proactive, not just reactive. They need an action plan.
Precisely. They need to do two key things, according to the research. First, actively facilitate innovation. Use tools like regulatory sandboxes, especially for complex things like AI agents handling transactions. Second, they need to articulate clear, principle-based regulatory frameworks now to manage the downstream socioeconomic impacts of automation.
Right.
That choice facilitate or inhibit, that's what will determine if the region unlocks its huge digital potential or, well, puts a cap on it.
So let's summarize the key takeaways for you, our listeners, particularly those shaping policy. For food delivery, the big story is this shift to profitability. It's creating new commerce opportunities, especially helping merchants with things like dine-in promotions and advertising, a potential lifeline. For transport, it's navigating that mandatory EV transition while staring down the barrel of a very complex, employment-sensitive AV future.
And tying both together is the urgent need for harmonized standards. You know, the ASEAN Guide on AI Governance and Ethics, it's a great starting point. But the lack of shared concrete standards for data flows for AI itself, that's a major risk to regional integration. Policy decisions being made right now will either build digital bridges or digital walls between ASEAN nations.
That tension between enabling innovation and ensuring stability seems paramount.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap up with our final provocative thought. What should policy shapers be really mulling over based on this deep dive?
Well, we talked a lot about the caution around AVs because transport provides so many jobs. Given that the displacement risk from robotaxis seems pretty much inevitable in the medium term, the really hard question for policymakers is this. What specific mechanisms, going beyond just basic regulation or broad incentives, could actually actively manage that displacement? Could it be things like mandated retraining funds tied directly to AV deployment? Maybe specific operating restrictions for AVs in certain areas or times? How do you ensure truly equitable advancement and maintain socioeconomic stability across ASEAN as this massive technological shift unfolds? That proactive approach to equity, that's the real test of smart policy here.